Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Now, chances are that if you're listening to this podcast, you're a dentist who's looking to enjoy a high level of commercial success while at the same time enjoying a fantastically enjoyable and fulfilling career as a dentist. So today we're going to be calling this particular episode, rather lovingly, the foot and mouth episode. And you might be wondering, why would we do that? Well, today we're speaking to Tyson Franklin, who is a podiatrist who has a fantastic practice up in Cairns. Tyson is no ordinary podiatrist. He thinks differently to most other healthcare practitioners, and he's been extraordinarily successful in building a practice. So in today's episode, I really want to kind of go behind the curtain of his practice and look at the lessons from what he's done in his healthcare practice, and really dissect out the lessons that are really relevant for dentists. We're going to be covering a whole stack of stuff. We're going to be going through a little bit about the things that he's done to grow such a successful enterprise, particularly around marketing. He's a very, very good marketer. We're going to be having a conversation with him about some of the biggest boo-boos he's made along the way, what mistakes he's made and things he'll do differently. We're going to have a conversation with him about managing workload and, you know, the big trap that many healthcare practitioners find themselves in is doing the clinical work by day and running the business by night. And Tyson's come up with a few really nifty ways of extricating himself out of the practice. And we share some ideas and some tips around that because both he and I are of the mindset that if you want to be a clinician, that's fantastic. But equally, if you want to be a business owner and get yourself off the tools, that's cool too. And we go through some of the ways about how to do that in a really practical sense. We talk about building teams. We talk about finances and knowing numbers, a whole stack of stuff. And it's a really good I think it's a really good lesson for anyone in healthcare practice, but particularly dentists in this instance, to dissect out those lessons and take them into your own practice and really put them to great use. So I really hope you enjoy the show this week. Without any further ado, here's Tyson Franklin. Ladies and gentlemen, today we are speaking to Tyson Franklin. Tyson's a podiatrist, as you all know, and he's the author of the book called It's No Secret, There's Money in Podiatry, and is coming to us all the way from Cairns in what is officially going to be called the Foot and Mouth episode today. So, mate, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here. I love that, foot and mouth. Makes sense.
It does make sense, mate. And, you know, it's really interesting because even though we're in two different professions, we've got very similar kind of businesses that we run. And I am really looking forward to exploring that because I reckon there's going to be probably more in common than meets the eye.
Well, considering we're at completely different ends of the body, you'd think there'd be nothing. Yeah, there's a lot separating us, but there's a lot of things that actually join us back together. So even my book, It's No Secret, There's Money in Podiatry, you could take the title off and call it It's No Secret, There's Money in Dentistry.
Yeah.
And the book would sort of suit. And you've read the book, so you would know what I mean.
Oh, mate, I've read the book from cover to cover. And for anyone listening, I'm just going to encourage you, even if you're not a podiatrist, you know, most of the people listening to this will be dentists, it's a great read. And there is some really solid advice in here for everyone who's in small business, including dentists. So I'm going to encourage everyone to grab a copy of that. It's a terrific read. And I've read it cover to cover. And it's something I dip into regularly as well.
Well, I did mention to you off air, my brother's a dentist. And he was probably the first person to actually read my book. And after he read it, he just went, one, I'm shocked that you wrote a book. he said, considering you failed English, he said, you should send a copy to your English teacher. He says, I wonder, did you really write it? He said, as I'm reading it, he said, I could just tell you wrote this book. He goes, there's all these Tysonisms all the way through it. And he was the first person that said to me, well, you could take the title podiatrist off, put on dentist. He said, and you're giving it the same message.
I agree. And I think, you know, we're certainly seeing from the same hymn sheet and all of this stuff. What I'm really curious to understand, Tyson, just so for the sake of the audience listening, can you give us a bit of a background? I know you've got your podiatry clinic up in Cairns, and I know you work with podiatrists to help them, you know, grow their practice and do cool things there. Just wondering if you can give us a bit of the backstory. How did you come to be in the position that you're in terms of running the clinic, you know, moving into the mentoring coaching space? What's the story there?
I think my story started when I was actually at university. when I was there, I enjoyed podiatry, and we had a we had one business subject, as they give you at university. Yeah, one business subject. So I did that subject, and I was the first person in the history of the university to ever get 100% for that particular subject.
Oh, wow.
And the business school came to me and actually said, have you thought about switching out of podiatry and doing business? And I went, I've almost finished. I'm not about to start something new now.
Exactly.
So, and when I got out, or just before finishing podiatry, I picked up a book, Noel Whittaker's Making Money Made Simple.
Yep, good book.
I read that book, and I actually met Noel a couple of months ago, which was pretty cool. I read that book, and all of a sudden, just something clicked that as soon as I started working, I enjoyed the business behind podiatry, pretty much from day dot, but I had no idea what I was doing.
Like none of us do when we first get into it, because, you know, no one teaches you. You had one business subject. We had none. So it was like, here's the deep end. Welcome to it. Go swim. See how you travel.
So it was pretty much something that just over a period of time, you just make mistake after mistake and learn from it, make more mistakes and learn from it, until moving to Cairns is probably one of the best things I ever did, because originally I was on the Gold Coast, and I remember one of my lecturers at uni saying, if you want to set up a good business, he said, go and find it where nobody else wants to go and go and work there for a while. So at the time when I came to Cairns, there was only one other podiatrist. So I thought, I'll come up here for a drive and have a look. And 24 years later, I'm still here.
Yeah, fantastic. And what's not to love about Cairns? It's tropical paradise. It's beautiful.
That's what I just said. I was in the pool.
Exactly.
About an hour ago.
Well, we're going to dive into that, no pun intended, in a moment. But I'm curious to know, as you kind of went through that journey, as you said, making mistakes, learning from them, making a few more mistakes, what lessons did you learn as you went through? What do you think would be some of the key things that came out of that for you as you went through, and any big aha moments?
Probably the biggest thing is, I wish I had listened to other people more. It was probably one of my biggest aha moments where I think my whole thinking changed, was I went along to a weekend workshop on business. And up until then, I thought I was doing pretty good, and I thought I knew a few things. And I went along to this workshop, and I sat in a room with 50 or 60 other people. And I was just bouncing off the walls when I came out. And one of the things that I remember walking away from was them saying, if you want to make more money, the only person that has a problem with your prices is you.
Yeah.
I went, huh. So I came out, and straight away, a certain service that we provided, the orthotics at the time, I went, okay, I'm going to put them up $50. And I did, and nobody flinched.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? We all get hung up on our fees, dentists included, we all do. And yeah, as you say, it's our problem.
So that was my biggest probably aha moment, was going on to something that I was second guessing, should I go or shouldn't I go? And it was actually my wife said, you should go along to that. That sounds like something you'd get a lot of benefit out of. And going from that just changed my thinking. I put my prices up. And it wasn't just all about the seminar. It wasn't about all putting your prices up. It was just about running an efficient business. It was the first time I'd really learned about having systems and developing systems and implementing something and seeing how it works and then making changes to make it work better.
Yeah, cool. That's fantastic. Mate, you just mentioned you've come back from the pool, and I'm sitting here in Canberra at the moment where it is bordering on arctically cold. You're sitting in Cairns. We've just jumped out of a pool. So clearly we're at different ends of the country. But one of the things I'm curious about, because, it's a Wednesday, it's middle of the day, you've had a dip, had a swim. Coming out of the pool, that must mean you've got some pretty good systems going at your practice for you to be able to step away from the clinic to be able to take some time. And, we did speak a bit off air, and I know you've throttled back your hands-on clinical stuff. So how did you get your systems going, and what ones do you think have made the most difference for you?
Well, I think everything in your business can have a system developed for it. And to me, every system should be developed that a 12-year-old could read it and understand. So if you've written systems and they're 4 or 5 pages and they're very complicated, you have to sit down with the person and go through them in detail and really explain how something works, because if they read it, it doesn't make any sense. Then you need to rewrite the system. So we've pretty much, every time a question was asked of me, I would write down what the question was and I'd write an answer. And that could become part of one system. So we might have one big system, and it might be how we handle the telephone. But in that system, you've got subsystems like, how do you answer the phone? What's your rule around how many rings? What do you say to the person when you answer the phone? What questions do they ask before they make an appointment? Every system, there's sort of a subset. How do you deal with an irate patient on the phone? Because, and the thing is, the more systems you have in place, the less time the staff are constantly bugging you. So in my book, this is the one part of the chapter where I actually, one part of the book where I was actually laughing when I wrote it. And my brother actually, after he read it, said, I bet you were laughing when you wrote that chapter about making a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, I said, yeah, I was cracking up. Because you could say to somebody, oh, tell me how you make a cup of coffee. And they go, oh, well, you get a cup, put coffee in it, add sugar if you want it, put boiling water, maybe add milk. That's a cup of coffee. And on the surface, that sounds like a simple process. But the simpler the process, and this is why people don't write systems, they go, well, it's so obvious. I don't need to write a system. But the simpler the system, the more open it is to interpretation. That cup of coffee, in the book I talk about, well, what size cup do you want? I've used the story where there's a 12-year-old, my nephew, making a cup of coffee for me. He says, well, what size cup do you have? Yeah, is it the big mug? Is it this one? Oh, there's one cup here that says, I work with idiots. Is that your cup? So he's decided which cup. Then it's, want sugar? Do I use what size spoon? Do I want the sugar heaped or level? What milk do you have in there? Fat-free, light milk, lactose-free milk? So just from making a cup of coffee, you can see how many questions there are. So therefore, if you're constantly having stuff annoy you, like a 12-year-old making a cup of coffee, then you'll understand why you never get any freedom from your business.
Mate, that is fantastic. I love that. And the fact that you've obviously got such a systemized approach to the way you do things, correct me if I'm wrong, that frees up a lot of the hard drive in people's minds as well. You know, a bit of brain space gets freed up. And, you know, we have a saying in our practice, we systemize then humanize. We have the systems like the 12-year-old systems, but we then allow people to kind of put a bit of their personality into what they do as well. Is that something that kind of rolls out at ProArch at your place as well?
Yeah, very much so. Like I said, when someone is working with us, okay, the system isn't there to bound you like this rope tied around you and you've got to stick with the system 100%. The system is just to give you a direction of which way you're actually heading. Instead of you sitting and thinking, oh, what should I do next? You know, you've got, yeah, they reckon a perfect example would be, they reckon the reason toilet paper is white and why there's only one roll in the toilet is because if you put four different colours there and had four different roles, people would never come out because they couldn't make a decision. To me, a system at work is saying to someone, this is the process that you go through. So they don't actually have to think about that. But as they do each system, their own personality and intelligence has got to be used.
Yes, of course. Because we're not trying to create robots, right? We're just trying to give them some structure to play with.
Yeah, so it might be part of your system when somebody phones up, you might want their date of birth. You need their date of birth. Now, you might get a patient on the phone that says, I'm sorry, but I don't want to give you my date of birth. So then what? What's your system on handling that? Our system is, if you don't give us the date of birth, you don't get an appointment because we require it. It's just part of what we do. So everybody knows, if I saw them hang up the phone and I asked them, oh, didn't they give you the date of birth? They go, no. Nah. And I go, that's fine. They know I'm not gonna say, oh, geez, yeah, it's been quiet. We really should have bent over backwards for that person. Because as soon as you start breaking the rules yourself or going outside the system, then it confuses everybody.
Yeah, cool. Hey, mate, I know you're big on goals as well. And coming back to how you've managed to get yourself off the clinical tools, so to speak, and into the pool, systems have obviously played a massive role in that. You know, we've documented things. No doubt you've got checklists and cheat sheets and on everything that you do there. But I'm curious to know, what role has goals made to your success in practice? And I'm aware through other mutual friends and acquaintances that you've had extraordinary success with your practice. So what role have goals played in that for you?
When people say, I'm not sure what it is that I want, I always say, okay, well, get a piece of paper and write down all the things you don't want. And if you write down all the things you don't want, some of the things you want are probably going to be the exact opposite. But yeah, like I wouldn't say that I'm magnificent at setting goals. Yeah, some people say they have this vision in front of them, of this grandeur of I'm going to have this car, I'm going to have all that. What drives me is whatever we achieved one year, my goal is to beat it. That's how I actually set my goals. I'll go, the clinic turned over this, or we saw this many patients last month, same time last year. A lot of my goal setting is actually done month by month. I'm constantly trying to do better than I did the month before, and I'm trying to beat what I did the year before for that same month. And setting those little goals, everyone at work could ask me at any day of the week, what's our turnover so far for the month? I know exactly what it is. I know what percentage it is compared to last month. I know what it is to the year before. I look at things every day. I look at things every week. I know at the end of each week, we should be hitting a certain target. Therefore, we will hit the target for the month.
Yeah, we do something similar. I'm guessing you're a bit of a spreadsheet geek like me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're going to get together and have a Microsoft Excel party or something, which will be the only people to turn up because everyone else will have more exciting things to do probably. But what I really love that you're talking about there, mate, is setting yourself, A, the challenge of beating last month and equally the same period last year. That's fantastic. But knowing your numbers is critical. I think there are so many business owners that kind of go into business and weeks go by, months roll by, quarters, even years roll by, and they're not really examining the financial performance of their practice, let alone setting in place methods where they can be proactive about achieving whatever it is they want to achieve. So I'm really keen to hear your perspective. I'm assuming that you have a forecast in place and you're tracking that against your expenses as well. I'm guessing that.
Yeah, well, before the year starts, I know what I want to turn over for the year. Yeah, and we do. We get spreadsheets. We get things from the account that so we know how much we're spending in different areas. I always, regardless of how the clinic is going, I budget a certain amount for advertising and I don't stray from it. So when if things do take, every business has a little dip or a quiet patch. The last thing I cut is my marketing. It's just something you should never mess around with. You should just keep marketing because that's one of the mistakes people make. They market 1 minute and when things are busy, they stop.
Isn't that just so common?
Yeah.
They turn their marketing taps on and then when the books get busy, they turn them off and there's kind of this, it's like a feast or famine approach, really. It's crazy.
Yeah, I call it, it's like a helicopter approach. And what they don't realize is if you're marketing and doing all this stuff, you gain all this momentum and then it doesn't take much to just constantly keep that momentum going. But if you come to a complete stop, it is so hard to just sort of really get that momentum going again. And we all get distracted. I had a period there about 3 or 4 months ago, and all of a sudden I realized I hadn't written a blog for the podiatry website for like 6 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I just went, geez, what happened there? Then all of a sudden I wrote one, and as soon as I wrote one, I thought, I'm going to write another one. And then next thing I wrote four. And then the next 2 weeks, I had posted about 8 different things, had done a frequently asked question. And once you're doing it, just your own excitement for doing it pushes even further.
Yeah. It's really interesting because, one of the things that I see with marketing as a common mistake in dentistry, and again, you can tell me if this correlates with podiatry as well, is I find that a lot of dentists generally take the view, look, I just want to have full appointment books. I don't want to think about marketing. I just want to have my head in my hands in people's mouths, basically doing dentistry. Do you find that as a bit of a thing that comes up in podiatry? And what would be your comment around that if it does come up?
It comes up in podiatry all the time, like I said, and my brother being a dentist. So my brother, we joke around every now and then. I said, look, if you won $10, $20 million in lotto tomorrow, would you keep doing dentistry? And he says, well, you know, I probably would because I actually love being a dentist. He goes, I enjoy helping people. I enjoy taking someone who's got bad teeth and making them have a beautiful smile again. He says, I really enjoy that. And I know even as a podiatrist, you have a child that comes in your clinic who's in pain and they can't play sport. And a month later, you've got them, getting in representative teams. You do sit back feeling pretty good about yourself. So I think a lot of podiatrists, a lot of dentists love doing what they're doing, but just they do struggle with the business side. And one of the things that I introduced in my business, which I actually think a lot of people should do it, I haven't even mentioned this to you, so you're going to hear this for the first time.
Yeah, I know.
Is I employed for myself what you'd call a marketing director. So it was a girl that had been working in my business for a couple of years, really outgoing personality. And I said to her, do you want to help me do my marketing? I want you to help promote my business. So we call her the patient and community relations manager. Her job is pretty much harassing me and making sure I write the blogs. She looks up, does a lot of the Facebook stuff, does a lot of Google stuff for me. I'm showing her how to do stuff on the website. If we write a report for doctors, we don't post anything about it. We hand deliver everything. Yeah, she goes around and visits all the the practice managers, and we have all these little bottles done up, prescription bottles with M&Ms in them, and we deliver them everywhere.
Isn't that great?
To me, if someone's got a good business, you've got good income coming in, part with just a little bit of your money and get someone to actually help you out to do that some of that marketing work for you. And if you don't like social media, then grab one of your kids and get them to do it for you. Pay them. It's their pocket money.
It's really funny, mate, because I really agree with you. I think having consistency in your marketing is really critical. And if the dentist or podiatrist themselves is not inherently as interested in it as they might otherwise be, then, of course, build a team to support the process, which is what you've done there with your marketing coordinator there. And what I really love that you're doing, mate, is there's a lot of high touch in what you're doing. So it's about relationships, really. You're building relationships with your doctors when you hand deliver the report, as opposed to just mailing it and being a nameless face. You have a name, obviously, but it's just another thing that comes through the mail. Now you're creating the relationship as your marketing girl goes around and meets the, you know, the front office people of the medical practice. This is great.
Well, the good part with her being out there is she's almost like a sales rep for us. Like, she'll hand deliver letters.
Yeah.
But at the same time, everybody that's sitting in that waiting room will see her name tag and where she's from. But it's got to the point now when she walks into a place, everybody's gone and grabbed their M&M bottles because she does top-ups when she drops in and sees them. And the thing is, you need someone who's a very social person, and you want someone who does not probably have a marketing background. Because you don't want them coming to you with, oh, I've got all these marketing ideas and how you should do your business. They've got to really be a people person.
And what I love about that as well, mate, is it's basically people being people. It's, you know, human interaction, isn't it? At the end of the day, marketing is about people as opposed to the latest SEO tactic. It's really about people.
It is. It's like social media. I see a lot of, I'll use my brother as a perfect example. When I said you don't have a Facebook page, you know, for your business. And he's like, I'm just not really into it. And yeah, my wife, because she's a dentist as well, she's not really into that side of things. But they don't realize, yes, but your patients are. And if you do set up a Facebook page for your business, don't make it all about dentistry. The word that a lot of people miss is the word social.
Yes.
So perfect example on our Priority Podiatry Facebook page. I put a thing up there and there's a person had a toe chopped off. And I said, yeah, and I put it, if this makes you sick, you might be lactose intolerant.
Oh, that's a dad joke. I love it, but it is fantastic.
The amount of people that commented on that and had a bit of a laugh, or I posted something was, you know, who's on first base? Yeah, Abbott Costello skit. So at least once a week, I will post something that is just funny. It's
yeah.
got nothing to do with anything. But we also post a lot about who we are as not just podiatrists, but who we are as people, what our staff are doing. We celebrate birthdays. That's what social media is for.
For anyone who's just tuned in, I'm talking today to Tyson Franklin, who's a podiatrist up in Cairns, and he runs an uber successful practice up there. He's also the author of a book, It's No Secret There's Money in Podiatry. We're going through some marketing stuff here, and if you just tuned in, I'm going to really encourage you to go back and listen to the last few minutes, because Tyson has just dropped a couple of marketing bombs there, which is just full of goodness. I really love what you're talking about there, mate. It's just about people being people. It's about letting people see behind the curtain, so to speak, that you're a person too, and you can have a laugh, you can celebrate a birthday, you can mark an occasion just like everyone else, and let people into your life a little bit. And I think that's, yeah, it's nice. It's good for the soul in the first place, but it's also really good for business.
But I reckon the other thing, you've got to realize that every person that I do mentoring with other podiatrists, I tell them the same thing right from the start. Business is fun.
Yeah.
The reason we get into business is that a lot of the times people will work for somebody else, and they'll work for them for a couple of years, and then they'll realize that you know, the person I work for is an idiot. Yeah, I could do better than this. Yeah, they're making all this money. They're driving that car, nice home. I'm going to go and set up and work for myself. And then so they work for themselves, and instead of working for an idiot, they work for a lunatic.
Or they become the idiot that someone else works for.
They become that person that they wanted to leave. And it's just this cycle, and they forget that business is fun.
Yeah, business is fun. We were talking off air before, and other than my wife and kids, business is my first love, and I know it's yours too, mate. You're doing some wonderful things there. Hey, mate, what I'd love to talk about as well is, you know, podiatry, you know, when you went to Cairns, you were one of only two podiatrists up there because there was someone there before. I'm guessing the marketplace is considerably more crowded now. So you've mentioned a couple of things that you do that set you apart from your competitors, you know, the prescription pills filled with M&Ms and the ability to get a script refill, so to speak, and a few other things there. What do you see as the main thing that sets you apart from the other practices out there? What are you guys doing differently? Because in dentistry, you know, one of the things that happens most commonly is everyone starts to look a little bit vanilla. You know, it's a bit of me tooism. Really beige, and beige is the most boring color in the world.
Saw a beige car the other day.
Oh, you're kidding me.
And my daughter, who's 11, went, my God, who would pick a beige car?
Hey, mate, don't knock the beige car, though, because in the 1970s, we had a beige Sigma, no less. If you're old enough to remember what the Sigmas were, it was a shocker. Very 70s.
So anyway, well, with our business, I think one of the main things is try and be first. Stop watching what everybody else is doing and then try to copy them, go, oh, geez, that's a good idea. We should have thought of that.
Yeah.
Or you've seen something, you go, oh, should we or shouldn't we do this? And you go, you know what? Nobody else is doing it. So if nobody else is doing it, try and be first. So my example I get is, if you thought of which business does takeaway breakfast, which fast food place?
No, I don't Macca's, I assume.
That's it. But I know Hungry Jack's have dove in there. I know KFC have dove in. I know Subway have tried. Whether they're still doing them or not, I don't know. But because McDonald's got in first, then it doesn't matter what the others do. All it does is remind everybody about McDonald's.
Yeah, true.
So what I've found in Cairns is now 13 podiatrists. Every time another one opens, I seem to get busier. They've come in and they're all copying each other. You can have a look at their ads and that they all look the same. And I'm sure in dentistry, you know, how many ads do you see and there's a smiling face?
It's absolutely the same. And typically the advertising in dentistry is either we're just like them but better, or we're just like them but cheaper. And either marketing tactic, I think, is suicidal marketing. In fact, I think it's really poor marketing in general. But what I love that you're doing is you're saying, okay, let's be the leader. Let's, you know, if you're not the lead dog, the view is always the same, really. And so it's, you know, get out in front and set the pace. And that's fantastic.
And occasionally, like, we'll introduce something and it's crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've spent the money, we've invested in it, we've given it some thought, and we just, you know what, yeah, no one really cares about that and it doesn't work. But, you know, you have to do that because every time, yeah, eventually you keep throwing enough mud, some of it sticks. Yeah, we were the first ones, we still are, when it comes to, say, making orthotics. We've got our own milling machine on site, so we scan feet. It takes us 12 and a half minutes to make a pair of orthotics for somebody. So we can do it the same day, but most of the times we just do it in 24 hours because we don't always have someone running the milling machine. So that technology is out there. Every podiatrist in Cairns could go and spend $100,000 and set this up, but they won't because they're tight. Yeah, they don't want to spend and invest money in themselves, so they don't go to courses, and they don't want to spend and invest money in their businesses, and they wonder why they're just amongst the pack and nobody even notices them.
Wow. That, look, you know, there's certainly no sugarcoating there, but I'll tell you what, guys, that is marketing and business advice. Yeah, that is so practical, so useful. And I certainly would second everything Tyson said there. It's really good stuff there, mate. And I'll tell you what, I love the fact that you just don't pull punches. I love that fact you hit it straight.
I have been pulling punches.
Yeah, mate, this is the sugar-coated version, isn't it, mate?
This is me holding back.
Oh, jeez, mate, we've got to get together and have a beer. Hey, I want to talk to you a little bit about building a team because, you know, clearly, you know, with your practice, you build a team around you. And when you're in Cairns, a bit like Canberra in a sense, that, you know, it's not a major metro area. And what I'm curious to know about is how have you gone about attracting talent to your particular practice? Sometimes, you know, with smaller centres, talent is, you know, there's competition for talent. How do you go about that?
Over the years, yeah, I think you find the same with Canberra, is, you know, trying to attract people to your area. It's sometimes been difficult because you live so far away. Because a lot of people, they're from capital cities. They go to university in the capital city, or even if they've come from regional areas, and then they go to, yeah, university in a capital city, and they don't want to come back. Over the years, it had been a little bit difficult. But what we've found now is by setting up a really good business, it attracts people. So if you have an average business providing an average service and not really doing much else, then they're sort of comparing everything and everything looks the same. So they're going to take one that's probably closer to home, capital city, where their friends and family are. But if you've got a business that's set up that's extraordinary and they go, wow, that really looks like a great business and somewhere I'd like to work, the last, you know, probably 10 years, I've had very little problem ever finding a podiatrist.
Oh, that's fantastic. And again, build that remarkable business. Not only will your patients come, your key staff members will come, and you'll retain them, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And even with, yeah, I know a lot of podiatry clinics, they always ask me about, oh, how do you keep your staff? What bonuses do you pay? Do you do this? Do you do that? And years ago, I used to pay bonuses and I was constantly replacing staff because the people that were working were in it for the money.
I don't pay bonuses either, mate.
So a couple of years back, about 5 or 6 years ago, I went, I'm not paying bonuses anymore. I'm going to pay people just good money and I'm just going to look after them. So I'll rock into work on a Friday afternoon with a carton of wine and put it down and say, everyone, just grab one on your way out.
Nice.
That $20 wine will give me more mileage with everybody than if I said, oh, here, I'll give you a $20 pay rise. They'll thank me that day. they'll forget about it by the following week, and then it's just cost me $1,000.
Lovely, mate. That's a really great little tip there. So again, for those listening, just listen to that and take it. You know, recognize your staff, reward your staff, you know, in ways that make sense, as opposed to just throwing cash. Because you know, there was a great study, and I'm going to kind of be caught short here with who the reference is, but there was a study, I think it was in Harvard Business Review, indicating that one of the motivators around staff retention was actually not so much money. They needed money, enough money to be able to get through, but it's building the great and remarkable practice. It's being recognized in a way that's meaningful to them. And you know, the Friday afternoon bottle of wine, I think, is a fabulous thing, mate. That's cool. I like that. I might pinch that for myself.
It was good because we'll go, and because we do a lot of advertising, you get perks, you get movie tickets, but occasionally we'll just take them out for lunch, or we'll give them the movie tickets, yeah, or you give them bottles of wine. And like you said, people want to work somewhere where they feel proud that they're working there. If somebody says, where do you work? And they go, oh, I work at such and such dental practice. And people go, oh, yeah, I know that place. It's really good. Yeah, and they probably want to be somewhere where they're thinking long term, yeah, maybe I might actually be part of this down the track.
Love that. That again, it's about getting the buy-in, the emotional buy-in of the staff. It's just you can't stress the importance of that. It makes such a difference, not just to the fun that you have at work. It makes a difference to the patient care. It makes a difference to the stability of the business. You know, you name it. It's just fantastic. The importance of getting that right is critical. Mate, I know you're going to have to get back to the pool at some point because you've got a pretty stressful day ahead of you. So we'll wrap up in a sec, mate. But one of the things I just wanted to quickly touch on with you, because I know listening to your story, getting off the tools, so to speak, and getting that balance, one of the things I'm imagining when you first started in your practice, and is common in a lot of small businesses, not just dentistry or podiatry, is many people find themselves kind of providing a service by day and running the business by night. We've kind of touched on the importance of systems. We've touched on the importance of having a good team. We've spoken about, you know, building a remarkable practice. Are there any other tips, you know, one or two or three tips that you could give guys who are thinking, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, working harder and harder, and I just need to kind of get a bit of, you know, breathing space back into my life? What would be one or two or three tips that you could suggest for those guys?
First one would be, if they don't have a coach or a mentor, get one. It was probably one of the best things I did, other than, yeah, that earlier on when I mentioned that seminar I went to on that one particular weekend.
Yeah.
But that was one of the things I got out of that seminar, was they were providing a coaching service afterwards. And I went, okay, well, I'm going to do this and see what happens. So I did it for 12 months and I outgrew them. So that's why I say to a lot of people, if you've got a coach or a mentor that you may have had one in the past and you feel like you're not getting what you want, there's nothing wrong with changing, because sometimes you can outgrow that person and you need something new, you need something fresh. So that's the first thing, is get outside advice, because you can't work it all out yourself. Tips you can get from other people is going to save you a lot of time and money. The second thing is, don't pull out too early. What I mean by that is, I've seen a lot of people where they'll have a business, it's going on pretty well, it's making pretty good money, so they employ somebody too early, because they're going, yeah, well, I don't want to do the work. I want to employ somebody else. Now I want them to do all the crappy work that I don't want to do, so I can just do the good stuff.
Yeah.
And then they wonder why they're constantly having to replace staff, because that person's doing all just doing crap work.
Mm-hmm.
So, but sometimes I think people need to work a little bit harder. This sounds terrible, but you got to work harder before you can actually employ that other person.
It doesn't sound terrible. It makes perfect sense, mate. It makes absolute perfect sense.
Yeah, and when you do employ the other person, don't give them the rubbish. Share the workload with them. The whole idea of having them there is to take some of your workload. So let them have the good stuff as well as the bad stuff, and then free up some of your time, and then keep working harder again until you can employ another person. And once you've got a few in there, then you've got to set a goal and just go, this is when I'm stepping away.
Yeah, nice. Fabulous. That's just some really good advice, good solid advice there for anyone looking to get off the tools. I really think that's fantastic. So step number one is, get yourself a mentor. Look, the best golfers in the world can't observe their own golf swing. Get someone to have a look at what you're doing there. There's plenty of people around who can assist with that. Equally, employ great people. Work hard before you bring someone else in. So, and don't pass off all the rubbish to them. Give them a share of the good stuff as well, and then work harder again to bring on your next person. Mate, that's solid.
But the other thing too is, yeah, you don't have to give up the tools. You know, I've heard other coaches, you know, this one group in particular in podiatry, and they're constantly just saying to people, you know, come with us and we'll show you how to give up working and just be enjoying the business. If they had said that to me, yeah, I've been a podiatry now 28 years. If they had said that to me 18 years ago, I'd be going, well, hang on, I enjoy what I'm doing. I don't want to have to give it up. So it's not about giving up your business. It's just about making your business run better so you can enjoy it more.
Completely. Because ultimately we go into business to create a business and a life, right? It's not just run a business that runs our life. So again, if you love being a dentist or if you love being a podiatrist, absolutely continue to do that. That is makes perfect sense. But if you're looking to give yourself a bit more of a breathing space, then the stuff that Tyson's already gone through there, I think is, you know, really good advice. And you're right, mate. There is no one-size-fits-all strategy. Some people want to stay full-time clinical. Others want to kind of step away a bit, and some want to step away completely. And whatever it is fine.
Yeah, and as the years went on, I felt different at different stages. So first 10 years, loving it. Next 10 years, enjoying it, but not loving it as much as I did. And then the last 8 years, I've been wanting to step away. And that's what it sort of worked towards.
Yeah, fantastic. Cool. Hey, Tyson, I wanted to say thanks on behalf of all the audience today for coming on the program. I know, you know, you've got some extraordinary stuff to share, and I hope we can get you back on the show to share some more, because I know you've got a fairly full dance card today. But again, mate, I really wanted to take a moment to say thanks so much for coming on the show. There's been so much good stuff you shared with us about building a successful practice. We've covered heaps of territory. So for anyone who wants to find out a bit more about Tyson, what he does, I'm just going to encourage you to go and check out his website, tysonfranklin.com, and check it out, because there's some really interesting blog posts there. There's a whole lot of things there that I read and you know, draw inspiration from as well. And I'm a big believer that, you know, sometimes the best ideas come from outside of dentistry. So, mate, I wanted to say, once again, thanks so much. You've been a gem.
No, it's, yeah, thanks for having me on the podcast. I was, when you asked me to do it, I was like, whoa, this is good.
It's been fun, mate, and we'll have to do it again.
Because I like the way that you've had different speakers from different industries. And one of the last things you just said then, one of the things I always say to people is some of your best ideas will come from outside of your profession.
Completely. In fact, I think most of my good ideas I've ever had have come from outside of dentistry.
And yeah, I think mine have too.
And one of the things I always say, this is just a little last little bit of goodness I hope I can share with the audience as well, is don't copy things, model the thinking, but don't copy. And I've always kind of taken that on board. I look at and things and draw inspiration from it. So I draw inspiration from what you do, Tyson, and others as well. So again, mate, thanks so much. You've been really wonderful and generous to come on the program.
That's been awesome. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.